Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome. It is Bowerly on News Radio 930 WBEN. And one of the topics I've been meaning to do, but other things have intervened since Monday, is immigration and the changes to immigration policy and the authority to make those changes. Who has it? And our guest is very well versed on this, an attorney who specializes in immigration law and one of our sponsors at News Radio 930 WBEN, although this is not paid programming. On the Trocare College WBEN live line will be attorney Rosanna Berardi. And if you have any questions on the immigration stuff that's going on since, last Monday, we invite your telephone call at, it's in the 716 at 803-0930. That's 803-0930. Star 930 on the cell phone and 1-800-616-WBEN. Rosanna Berardi, thanks a lot for joining us. Much appreciated.
My pleasure. Always love to be here.
It has been 1 week since President Trump returned to power. And so far, just over 2,500 illegals have been arrested. How does that compare with the Biden years?
Wow. Well, I've got to tell you, this is year 28 for me as a U.S. immigration lawyer. And man, the speed in which all of this is happening is just unprecedented. I mean, I knew the administration was going to come out strong. I could never expect that they would have this much movement in literally a 7-day period. It is unprecedented.
Now, like reading around the country about thousands of people arrested, last I checked in Western New York, 3.
Yeah, I think they have. I think the administration has their eyes on bigger metropolitan areas, the Chicago's, the New York, the Miami, where they have concentrated groups, what have you. And also, no, these just aren't immigration officers. The administration has tapped into the DEA. So any drug arrests, if there's any, immigration issues there, FBI, the marshals, like they are all involved and all deputized to now ask about U.S. immigration status. So I don't expect to see droves and droves of people leaving Western New York, but the big cities, I think this is a glimpse. And I think they came out really strong as part of their messaging, as part of the rhetoric, as just part of the announcement that this administration cares greatly about lawful immigration.
And, administration has a mandate. Everybody knew what this administration's policies were going to be, and it has a mandate from the voting public, presumably, to do what it said it was going to do during the campaign. Now, what's these people, first of all, before we get to where they are taken, what is the probable cause or reasonable suspicion, whatever the legal terminology is, for bringing somebody into custody?
Well, usually it's criminality. It's really hard to, go after people that entered, say, on a student visa and never left, or a visitor's visa and never left. Usually the lowest hanging fruit is criminality, or there's a lot of people roaming around the United States with final removal orders, which that means they've been through the entire immigration legal process. A judge said, okay, go home, you're deported, and they never left. So, I mean, yesterday, New York Times was reporting there's up to 1 million people like that in the United States. So we usually see the administration, plenty of administrations prior to Trump have done this with a lot less fanfare, but that's the lowest hanging fruit. So any people with, prior final removal orders or criminality that, is very, very obvious, those are going to be the people that they're going after. But they said, listen, if you're keeping company with these folks, we're going to grab you too. So, you know, I think they're targeted, but they're also not opposed. Like, hey, if you're, you know, I don't know, in a drug house and they caught the big fish and there's a couple little fish around that also don't have immigration status, they're all going to be prosecuted.
Okay, legally, if a city says it's a sanctuary city, do the feds have supersedent jurisdiction?
Technically, yes. Really, really interesting. So sanctuary city is a made-up concept. It's not under the law. It's been around for over 20 years where cities are like, sorry, immigration, we're not going to help you prosecute people that break the law. Well, really interesting. A lot of these cities are changing their tone. And it may be because last Tuesday, the Department of Justice put out a very, very, very stern memo saying anyone that fails to comply at the state or local level with respect to immigration will be prosecuted by the U.S. Attorney's Office. We're going to go after them aggressively. So, you know, all this like willy-nilly, well, we're a sanctuary city, we're not going to help, and no one ever did anything about it. There's now some teeth behind it, and I think we're really going to see, you know, we're going to see government officials on the state and local level really being prosecuted if they don't cooperate. So,
I mean, people like Mark Poloncarz, who put out tweets back when it was Twitter about avoiding being arrested?
Yeah, probably. And, you know, it's really interesting. I mean, obviously I'm biased. I'm an immigration lawyer. But in what other part of our law does our society say, you know, people that break that, we don't really care. It's all right. It's fine. Like, I always just find it so alarming that people and government officials, municipalities are fine with people breaking a federal law. I mean, we don't do it with guns. We don't do it with taxes. And I know there's a humanitarian component on the immigration side, but still, I mean, we are a nation of law and order, purportedly. And I always just found it really odd that this concept of sanctuary cities ever got, you know, started and gone forward.
Yeah, I mean, sanctuary is such an anachronistic idea anyway, in my view. 803-0930, our guest is immigration attorney in Buffalo, Rosanna Berardi. So once these people and 2,600 people within the last week, over 900 arrests yesterday at home, probably during the Bills-Chiefs game, once they're arrested, where are they taken?
So, yeah, really interesting. So we're hearing all this noise about, okay, people are being picked up, they're being arrested, they're being detained. These are not individuals that are allowed to just be put on a plane and removed. So under the U.S. Constitution, they are afforded the same legal rights that you and I or any U.S. citizen is afforded. So, for example, if they're arrested on a drug offense, they are likely being prosecuted under, let's say, the Illinois drug laws, and before they're released into the public again while awaiting their hearing and their due process, for the more serious offenses, a lot of times they're detained. Now, the second part of the story that we're not hearing about is that there are immigration detention facilities all throughout the United States. We have one here in Batavia, New York, and those, to my understanding, are overflowed. Now, there is some talk that individuals picked up in these raids will go to, you know, Erie County Holding Center or any of the local municipalities. But for the very serious offenders, they are definitely going in a detention facility and will stay there until they get lawyers, they're able to appear. But just know, this is a long, arduous process. I mean, it's great. The government's starting this. They're trying to remove people that broke the law. But they are entitled to their criminal hearing, criminal lawyers, has to say they get sentenced to a 5-year prison sentence, have to serve that, and then they go to the immigration judge, and the immigration judge determines whether he or she is deportable. So it's a lot of smoke and mirrors right now. It seems like a lot's happening, but the second part of the story that we're not hearing the media cover at all is, like, what's really happening with these folks?
What is really happening with these folks?
Well, they're probably being detained. They might be being released on bond. Really, the question is, how long are they going to remain in the U.S.? Subject to right to counsel, if they can't afford one will be provided. So, you know, it's not this full swoop of, okay, we're getting rid of all the lawbreakers. We have checks and balances under the Constitution that doesn't allow for that. So, again, it's what it is, what the American public wanted with respect to immigration and voting in the election. But we also have a system of checks and balances. So even though it appears that 2,500 people, you know, have been picked up, just remember, they're picked up. They're not leaving the United States anytime soon.
We're talking with immigration attorney Rosanna Berardi on News Radio 930 WBEN. Our phone number, if you have any questions about the immigration stuff that's been taking place in the past week under President Trump, 803-0930, star 930, 1-800-616-WBEN. This whole idea of entitled to a lawyer under the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, they're entitled to a lawyer. But, Rosanna, lawyers come in all specialties: personal injury, criminal, tax lawyers, corporate lawyers. How many lawyers actually have competency in immigration law?
Yeah, surprisingly, Tom, especially even here in Western New York, we're a small group. There's not hundreds of immigration lawyers in Western New York. There's probably 50 tops. And in the bigger cities, you know, we're not the PI lawyers, right? We're not the personal injury lawyers that you see on all the billboards and all the commercials. So, you know, not everyone is afforded a right to a free immigration lawyer. They are on the criminality side, but there are groups like Volunteer Lawyers Project or, you know, the Bar Association of Erie County, Viva La Casa. They all have immigration teams, Journeys End, that provide lawyers at a lower rate than, you know, in the private bar. So there's some, but definitely not enough for what we see coming down the pikes.
I want to get into this whole idea of birthright citizenship. My friend Frank Panasek has suggested that he lives in the country, and if his neighbor's cow breaks through his fence and gives birth to a calf on his property, neither the cow or the calf are his responsibility.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that. So, again, just remember, big picture, zoom out. Whether you like it or not, we have this thing called the U.S. Constitution that lays out the rules and regulations for living in the United States. And it's well, well established, decades and decades and decades of case law, as well as the legislative history pertaining to any cases regarding this issue, clearly state that you must, if you are in the United States and you are born on U.S. soil, you are a U.S. citizen. No ifs, ands, or buts. Now, there's an argument over, subject to the jurisdiction, there are four words in the U.S. Constitution that, you know, we see trying to be flipped on its head. Here's the problem that I have. The U.S. Constitution, if people want to change, there's a process for that. And that process is not an executive order. We should all be quaking in our boots. And I'm pretty much apolitical, talking down the middle here. But as somebody that lives in the United States and that understands democracy, we should not be changing the U.S. Constitution by way of an executive order. It's just not appropriate. It should require the rule of law of Congress and the procedure of a constitutional amendment. So people might not like this and whatever on that front, but it should not be changed by an executive order.
But how come it seems so much easier to open the gates than it is to close the gates?
Yeah, well, therein lies the problem, right? And I keep telling all clients, I've done a lot of media in the last week, as you can imagine, the immigration law, the Immigration Nationality Act, has not been meaningfully changed since 1996. Okay? 1996. Why? Because Congress, doesn't matter, red, blue, blah, 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 they won't touch it. It's a political beast. But the law is broken. So we have laws on the book, Tom, that say you cannot enter the United States unlawfully, and there's penalties for that. But we live in a nation somehow, some way, have chosen to look the other way with respect to immigration violations.
I wonder if they'd look that way if I didn't pay my income taxes or my property taxes. That delightful experience last week. Hold on. Rosanna Berardi, immigration attorney on News Radio 930 WBEN. Whenever I receive a letter from Francina Spoth, I know it's not good news. And Oh, so predictive. This is like the tush push. Call me Sean McDermott Bowerly here. Could have seen this coming from a mile away. Toto's Rosanna. Our guest, of course, is a woman who's had to live with that song most of her adult life. Buffalo attorney Rosanna Berardi, who specializes in immigration law, helping people doing it the right way. And she's with us on News Radio 930 WBEN at 803-0930, star 930, 1-800-616-WBEN. We left off with your saying if we are truly to end birthright citizenship, it must be done through a constitutional amendment.
Correct. And thank you, by the way, for that musical bump, because when I first got on, I didn't hear it, and I was like, oh, they forgot. But rest assured, you took care of me. Thank you so much.
No, well, elephants and Sicilians never forget, and I'm more of an elephant now. But let's talk about the Remain in Mexico policy. What exactly does that mean?
So Remain in Mexico, it's controversial, but it actually sort of makes sense. If you think about most migrants coming from Central America, they travel really, really far and pass through many, many countries before coming to the U.S.-Mexican border. So during the first Trump administration, there was this Remain in Mexico policy in which the administration said, hey, look, you can apply for asylum all you want, but you're not going to wait in the United States, you know, for 3 and 4 and 5 years while doing so. Instead, you have to wait in Mexico. So that was under the first Trump administration. Biden took office, tried to shut it down. It went through a slew of courts, federal courts. And ultimately, the court said, no, this is reasonable. You can do this. So last Monday, a week ago, the Trump administration said, hey, we are definitely reinstating this policy. And it calls for people who are applying for political asylum to wait in Mexico. Now, Mexican government, not thrilled about this, but it is lawful based on the last round of litigation.
I know we've talked about this before, but one of the arguments about people who are trying to get into the United States because of government persecution is, okay, you came from Venezuela or Brazil. You went through a whole bunch of different countries that weren't governed by the government you says is going after you. Stay there. Aren't you supposed to stay in the first country that can has a border between you and the government which is trying to chastise or harm you?
Yeah, I mean, that is really logical. But unfortunately, patterns of migration, you know, for decades and decades have people coming to the United States for a very good reason. You know, political asylum applicants, the system is so broken. The law is just so antiquated that if you are applying for political asylum, I mean, you can wait in the U.S. up to 5 years. I mean, who wouldn't want that? You know, I've not been to a lot of the Central American countries, but based on what I know and read, everybody would want to come to the United States if you're able to stay. So this Remain in Mexico policy is really an attempt to detract from that and really lower costs, lower taxpayer dollars with respect to, you know, funding migrants who are here for a really long time. And I keep joking, if we put this political asylum system in hands of private business, this thing would be fixed overnight. We'd get people in and out. We'd still afford them due process. But the government, for whatever reason, just drags this out for so unnecessarily long.
Is it legally possible to do that, or could that not be put under the auspices of the Department of Governmental Efficiency?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe DOGE will be the answer. I'm not really sure what they're going to do. But again, it'll probably be on my tombstone when I die. Hashtag, where is Congress? Congress has the ability to fix all of this, Tom. They do. They have control right now. They've had control in the past. Doesn't matter, Democrat, Republican. We've been in this situation before, and everyone's like, oh, wait, oh, Congress? Oh, no, let's do all these extreme measures. Executive orders, constitutional amendments. Like, where the heck is Congress, and what are they doing?
Broken. I have to ask you, I mean, the question is, when you see a situation you don't understand, look to the financial interest. Who is bucking this? Why is Congress afraid to tackle this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a political landmine, if you will, because really what Congress person wants to go on record saying we need, you know, foreign labor in the U.S., which we do. Should we? Probably not with the size of our country, but we do. There's gaps in agriculture. There's gaps in medicine. But for a politician to go on record saying, you know, not America first, we need more foreign workers, I think is super controversial. And, you know, they keep talking about comprehensive immigration reform. I'm like, okay, done with the comprehensive. Let's just fix one part of, like, let's just start small. Let's just take one bite of the apple. And I mean, this asylum thing's a disaster. And all we keep talking about is law enforcement and the president. We are missing the point here. We are missing the accountability piece. This falls squarely right into Congress's hands. And, you know, no offense, during the commercial hour, the news reported that, you know, Chuck Schumer was talking about resources for bird flu. Like, okay, fine, but we have a huge immigration mess. And let's focus on that and fix it correctly under the auspices of our U.S. Constitution.
I'd like to know how Chuck Schumer can amass a net worth that he has given the salary of a United States senator, more importantly. The asylum system, what needs to be fixed with that? I mean, what is the asylum system and how do you go about fixing it?
So if you enter the United States, let's just say at the southern border, and you're from Venezuela or Guatemala or, you know, a country of that nature, you can say, okay, I'm coming in because I'm afraid. I'm afraid to live in my country. I'm afraid because I know of government actors in Venezuela that are coming after me and my family personally, and I can't go home. Upon saying that, you're asserting a claim of asylum, which the U.S. government then is required to allow you to file for a political asylum application. That application goes to Citizenship and Immigration Services, and there's many, many levels of that that take a long time. And ultimately, if you're denied, you can then go to an immigration judge. And if you're denied there, then you can go to the Board of Immigration Appeals. So if you're catching the theme here, lengthy, long, tedious. And the real issue is it is incredibly difficult for most asylum applicants to document their claims. You cannot be coming here because you want a better life. You cannot be coming here because there's more jobs in agriculture here than your home country. And so many people say to me, well, they just want a better life. And I agree with that. Listen, I'm a first generation immigrant. My dad came to the United States legally for a better life, but that is not the foundation of political asylum. So, you know, if we want to help people and we want to, you know, welcome them, the basis for which to apply for political asylum is incredibly complicated and not very successful for most people.
When Canada becomes the 51st state, is that going to hurt your practice?
Oh, boy. I don't know if I should touch that one.
That's not a serious question. I just thought I'd throw it in there.
Yeah, we'll see with that. We'll see.
Okay. Deportation. A couple of countries come to mind. Number one, Colombia. And overnight, about 3 o'clock this morning, the cryptocurrency markets went into a nosedive. And some of the instant analysis was, well, this is a direct result of President Trump calling for tariffs on Colombia. If Colombia continued to refuse American military planes bringing back Colombian citizens. And, you know, while all that was breaking, there was like a gap in the news coverage. And eventually Colombia did basically say, OK, you can bring our people back. Can we talk about the deportation flights and what all is involved? How do you get a seat on a deportation flight?
Well, you know, again, this is the part of the story that no one talks about or no one knows. So, okay, it's super complicated to deport somebody on a good day, right? They have to, if let's say it's a criminal, they've got to go through the criminal process, serve their time, go through the immigration process. A judge has to say, okay, you have no legal right to stay here, now go home. Well, guess what? That person that's told to go home needs to have a travel document, either a passport or some type of temporary travel document from their home country. A lot of countries won't provide that. Guess what? You can't put these folks on a plane without legit travel documents. And, I mean, it was really interesting when I saw the headline over the weekend that Colombia is like, nope, we're not accepting this flight. And Mexico has done it, too. Now, that's just a very big political, you know what, from those countries. But the president of the United States does legally have power to put sanctions on those countries under a lot of international law that says, hey, You cannot refuse your own people. And to get a seat on that plane takes a lot of time, a lot of money from the U.S. government, the federal government, and that person has to have a travel document. So let's just say with this flight of Colombians, I'm presuming they all had legitimate travel documents or passports as Colombian nationals. In terms of the Colombian government saying, we're not accepting them, they are going to not only, they could face tariffs, they can face sanctions, and the government can then say, okay, anyone else from Colombia that wants to come to the U.S., so sorry, close the door on visa issuance and all of that. So really crazy political stuff going on internationally. And again, these deportation flights, when I used to work for the federal government for 5 years and I used to see what my colleagues would have to go through to actually get people on these flights, it is a ton of work and time.
Is there more legroom on one of these planes than there would be on a commercial carrier?
No, not to my understanding. They're regular commercial. A lot of officers, you know, it's their job to travel and make sure that these individuals are escorted home properly, handed off to government officials. I mean, they're not just put on a Southwest flight and say, okay, go with God. You know, there's definitely a government presence there, and it's complicated and expensive for the U.S. government. So, you know, all of this stuff from the Trump administration, really good start in terms of what constituents want, what voters want. But this stuff is really complicated. It's really expensive. And, you know, we just get these really vague headlines of, you know, it appears that things are being done. And believe me, prior to the last administration, they are going at a hell-bent pace. So, you know, it's just the tone. And don't forget, this kind of stuff gets out to the public, to the smugglers, to people thinking of coming to the U.S. The message right now is, no, stay home. This is going to be really hard, and we're not going to make it pleasant for you.
What will the presence of armed deterrence do at the border?
Yeah, you know, I go back and forth on that one. So, look, there's always been the Border Patrol, right? That is an agency under Homeland Security. They are armed. There's Customs and Border Protection, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Now, you know, they're talking about putting the National Guard or calling out people from the reserves. You know, you've got to be careful with that, right? You don't want it to turn into the wild, wild west. Yes, I do think people should be armed at the border because there can be harm, but I'm not sure if using our military reserves for that is a good purpose. And again, just my singular opinion, the government may have way more reason to do that than I would ever know or be privy to. But there is some concern about, you know, turning it into kind of a gun state or the wild, wild west, if you will.
Well, there's landmines.
Yeah, sure. No comment.
I mean, just saying, anti-personnel devices. We've talked about asylum. Can we talk about the refugee program and its suspension, Rosanna?
Yeah, so this one is a public service announcement. There is a huge difference between a refugee and a migrant, okay? Refugees are individuals that are outside of the U.S. in very war-torn, conflicted countries like Afghanistan, and they are vetted by the United Nations, High Commission on Refugees, the U.S. Department of State. They are deemed to be in war-torn territories, you know, Afghanistan, Ukraine, and cannot safely live there. So a refugee, in which we have a lot of in Western New York, particularly from the Burmese community, these individuals are vetted. These are real deal people that are not coming here for a better life. They're coming here truly for their safety. So the refugee program, in my opinion, based on what I've known and seen for over two decades, is not one of abuse and is not truly the problem with the U.S. immigration system. It's actually one of the programs that works and does what it's supposed to. And upon getting refugee status, which is incredibly difficult and time consuming, refugees are able to come in, work, contribute, pay taxes, do all the things lawfully that we want people to do. So when I saw this was part of the Trump administration's menu to shut down, I was like, come on, you guys, this is really one of the few things that works under the immigration law and benefits, you know, our local communities and municipalities in a way that, you know, this is really how the immigration law should work. So but they are much different than the migrants that we saw last year, you know, by the boatloads and truckloads crossing the border for better life claims. And those individuals have this long, expensive, arduous process in front of them. So they're not the same, but people use those terms, migrant and refugee, interchangeably, and they're totally different. And I have the utmost respect for people that can obtain refugee status, as it is very, very difficult. And oftentimes they're families of, you know, U.S. personnel that might be abroad doing translation work in very, very hostile nations. This is one of the few things that works, and I wish they wouldn't monkey with it, but they did it the first administration as well. And I just think it was part of a larger agenda.
And you mentioned Burma, and what's going on there, as I understand it, is the Muslim minority population is being ethnically cleansed by the majority population?
Yes, that's my vague understanding. I can't pretend to be an expert in Burmese history, but yeah, there are a lot of Burmese refugees. We've gotten some really good food in Western New York because of that. And, you know, there's concentrations of groups because there'll be, you know, a few family members that have other families come over. And, you know, that's what we've really seen in Western New York. And it's not a bad thing. I just wish that they would not monkey with that program and then clean up the political asylum system. So this could work the way it's intended. I mean, the spirit in the legislative history of political asylum is not what we have today. It just isn't. And you know,
legally, I need to interrupt here at this point, but legally, does the administration have the right unilaterally to indefinitely suspend the refugee program?
Yeah, they do, unfortunately. And we'll see. I mean, 4 years is a long time for an administration, and we'll see, you know, if they turn that back on. But I hope they do. I mean, A for effort in trying to get their arms around this. And again, whether you're Democrat, Republican, neither, independent, A for effort for trying to do something. We have a giant mess in our hands. And this was, you know, the number one campaign issue. And I think it's a really big reason that Trump was elected. But this stuff's complicated and takes time. And remember, hashtag, where is Congress? What the heck is Congress doing? Let's hold our congressmen and women, you know, responsible for doing what they're supposed to do, which is make the darn law, which is the last thing they do. So I really, you know, it's been a tough week. The amount of new executive orders that have come out, mind-numbing. I thought it was going to be crazy. I never expected this amount. And boy, they've got, you know, they're working this on all ends. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But zoom out, you know, where you have three branches of government. The president does not make the law, has no business. I don't like executive orders. I'll go to my grave saying that. I know something has to be done, but we have three branches of government for a reason.
And as I like to say, if you want to know what open borders does to a people who are currently occupying a land, ask a Native American. Rosanna Berardi, thank you very much. I appreciate your time very much. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Take care, Tom.
Rosanna Berardi, immigration lawyer on News Radio 930 WBEN, coming up on 557. Thank you to Tanner Saunders for magnificent work behind the glass and his brilliant analysis of the Bills situation yesterday. Stand by, Tom Puckett next with Buffalo's Evening News on News Radio 930 WBEN. I'm back tomorrow, 2 to 6, following David Bellavia.